Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Red Men Radio. We're basically going to spend the vast majority of an hour talking about how amazing Liverpool are after beating Barcelona and dreaming of a potential double. Clockwise away from me, we have got Ross Chandler, we've got Bailey Shaw, and we've got Si Fletcher as well. Kickoff question comes from Big Fudge XXL.
Still the best name we've ever seen.
It's pretty good. Like, Glenn Murray knocks in an injury time header to tie the game and hand Liverpool a title, but your firstborn child looks like Glenn Murray for the rest of its life, receding hairline and all. I thought about this, and
Does that mean Jack becomes? This is the important question.
This is more of an important question for me and Ross, because we actually have firstborns.
Only yours means, is a boy, though, so it's probably not as bad.
Is it true? I have to basically deform my beautiful child and myself for this, and that's a tougher question. So I will ask yourselves. Gents.
I literally said it could look like Sloth. From the Goonies, full on, and
we'll
be called,
do it with yours.
And be called like, hey, and be called like Billy Joe Kevinson, like the worst name. Looks like shit. If we win the league,
I'd say. But what you'd have to do is you'd have to make sure that you kept it a secret from the child that you'd made this path.
It's your fault.
But also, the 50-50 chance that it's a boy or a girl is a thing. If it's a boy, then it's more livable than it's a girl. If it's a girl, obviously. But you'd have to keep it a secret because your child would be like, you selfish bastard. You made me look like Glenn Murray for the rest of my life or something that I wasn't even born for. Yeah. I didn't enjoy Liverpool winning the league. I couldn't care less whether they win it or not, to be honest. Listen, I wasn't born.
I had a three-day piss up and was it worth it?
What if there's a question like where she sees Brighton on the TV, like highlight reels of when we won the league, and that's the goal, and she's like, hang on, what?
Is that my real father? No, it's a whole thing.
Shut up, Glenda.
I'll tell you one thing. Next time we meet, I'll tell you about Glenn Murray.
Oh my God. Right, news in brief, very much in brief, because we'd rather talk about Barcelona. De Ligt apparently turned down Manchester United. Ross, that's going to happen a lot to them this summer, isn't it?
It's boss. We covered it on the Around the League earlier this week. Just going, what reason have you got to go to that club? Mm. You see, there's so many clubs on it. Well, but it's not that anymore. It's not money.
Simon makes the money gesture.
Because,
by the way, the podcast listens.
Look at what's happened with Alexis Sanchez. He's just ruined the whole thing for him. Saying $400,000 a week. That's the standard now for Manchester United. Someone goes there. That's why Herrera's not signing a new contract. Why De Gea's not signing a new contract. They're going, you've got a guy there who doesn't play football, who can't grow a moustache. He's on double the money that I'm on. And he never plays. So that's what and there's that amount of people that have been there and hasn't worked out, that have gone for money. Di Maria, Sanchez hasn't worked out. Mkhitaryan didn't work out. There's a list of people.
Yeah.
And you go there now. What's the pull? Like, if your money incentivised, United need to change that. And go, you need to stop buying people and stop the cash.
I don't think they do need to change that, if I'm perfectly honest. I think
Just carry on with this
forever and ever. This is glorious.
The problem with players going to clubs for money is they probably, chances are, they're a talented player, but they've got the wrong mentality that you need to push on, like Liverpool have done. And Sutton Klopp always goes on about is how important the character of the player is before he signs them.
There's a possibility that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer could sell them on a dream. Like, you know, hey, look, I'm doing this, I'm bringing back the glory days, and look, I've got Alex Ferguson's phone number. Isn't that lovely? And all these new kids are like, who the fuck's Alex Ferguson? But you're right, it's money, you know, and Mike, like De Ligt, for example, he's like 18, 19 years old, he'll know, he's got a very long career ahead of him. There'll be no pressing desire for him to go and earn 400 grand a week when he can go and earn, he might earn a quarter of that, but he'll learn how to be the best centre-half in world footy. Yeah,
and mount a title challenge.
And mount and potentially win stuff. Yeah, it's glorious. Absolutely glorious.
That was the best thing, I think. Sort of, obviously, the game and everything was phenomenal, but if you take away sort of like the fans' reaction to it, I saw United fans, I saw Arsenal fans, all respective fans saying, that's where I want my club to be. Mm. You know, that's exactly what we are missing. Arsenal fans and United fans are the core of that, saying, you know, we've got an all right manager, but the system's just broken. And how do we get from step F, where we are now, to step A, where Liverpool are? And and United are, they don't even have the blueprint. They haven't taken any steps. They don't even know where to go with it. Because like, you're right, the manager, no one's going to come to him for that. Mm-hmm. No one's going to come to them because of the state they're in, not going to come for the competitions that they're in. Mm-hmm. So it is just the money. And you attract the wrong crowd with that.
A lot of players will have grew up supporting Manchester United, and they look at Old Trafford and stuff like they come back against PSG and stuff like they've had good moments in the last year, but it's the fact that Solskjaer had his good results and then all of
got
a sudden
got the job and
it's gone to shit in the same way that it went to shit for Mourinho before him, mm-hmm. and Van Gaal and Moyes before that, and Solskjaer is improving as a manager and he hasn't got enough experience. To prove he could well do it, but he hasn't shown that he can bounce back from a poor run of results and get the dressing room.
The thing
back
that
on
Liverpool had when we started rebuilding the Klopp was Klopp helped paper over some of the cracks because we weren't spending the biggest money on wages and we weren't delivering success. You know, we dropped out of, you know, we were back in the Europa League, weren't we? And things weren't going great. And Klopp's reputation was enough to get us off the ground until we built everything else around it. I think you need a few things, and I think you're right, more and more just money's not enough of a solution, because if money was the right thing, bear in mind, Mourinho, as much as everyone kind of turned on him this season, still a phenomenal manager.
Yeah.
Still, you know, and I've no doubt that if he was given a budget the same size as Pep and whatever, he probably would have done a bit, you know, at least been a bit more competitive, but cry me a fucking river either way.
And it's the Klopp thing's interesting for me because obviously Klopp came in, but the calibre of team we had were between 6th and 10th. Mm-hmm. You know, the players we had, they weren't on big wages, so he didn't have egos in the dressing room. Whereas Solskjaer's coming in after managing two mediocre clubs, when he's got Paul Pogba, David De Gea, Lukaku, Sanchez on Superman. He's got huge names to deal with in the dressing room, and he needs to clear it. He needs to balance the books and re-establish himself as the manager. And
his response is definitely like, "Oh, I'll tell Fergie on you."
Yeah,
I'll tell Fergie. Yeah. Never.
Go and celebrate a 2-2 draw at West Brom. Come back with the piss taken out of you for 2 years and see where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. the latest on Maxi Gomez, Alberto Moreno's future, Marco Asensio and more is on the Reds News Roundup show on the RedmenTV.com this week. I'm going to be plugging this a lot because it's great, because Liverpool are in a Champions League final and we get to build up to that for a fortnight. So if you want to watch that, get over to the website. Good sponsor this week, it is Tokyo Time. They do genuinely phenomenal headgear.
I own two of them.
Let you, Bailey, you know, I mean, not right now.
No.
In fact, I'll tell you what, go and grab the caps if you would be so kind, Bailey.
Not a problem.
What we'll do is for video watchers, we're just going to do the most incredibly seamless transition back into Bailey returning. There we go, perfect. Fine. Anyway, Tokyo Time headgear. We've got some selection of caps which everyone can have a little peruse at and look at and what have you. In video form, you listen to in podcast form, let me just assure you that is absolutely phenomenal, top quality headgear in a range of styles to suit every kind of colour scheme you're going for. Bailey is a big hat guy.
With this, look at this.
I know, he's got to cover.
I have to do this.
He's got to hide the mane.
Yeah. I look a bit soft if I wear caps, so I'd make them look bad.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna do them over by putting
Bailey
one on.
Very much suits these. Yeah.
He does. No, it's probably not the same shade red as last year's kit.
But that's a potential Red Men. There's a potential Red Men hat. There's also go on the website. We'll leave a link in the description underneath. And there's a discount code for you wonderful, wonderful watchers, listeners, and subscribers. Use code REDMEN10, capitals REDMEN10.
Pulse off pink.
You're just keeping amongst yourselves. Redmen 10 for a 10% discount on the whole range of phenomenal gear they've got over there. But I would highly recommend, you know, we can't really do them justice because none of us look quite as good in them as Bailey Shaw. You know what?
You don't even look like Mikey.
Not doing that again.
That's quality. So yeah, go to the website, check it out, and get an amazing 10% discount thanks to us. Tell them we sent you it as well. Always good. So Barcelona, don't know if you've heard, lads. There's a little game of football last night.
Do we have to talk about this?
Oh, got it. Go on.
Yeah. Just want to talk about Newcastle for a bit.
Yeah. So what was really funny was. Sorry, I'm getting people ringing me. It's very unprofessional. Not as unprofessional as Graham Souness getting rang the other day, live on Sky. But he just didn't bat an eyelid. I have totally blinked there. Yeah, Barcelona. Everyone had us written off, and I'll be perfectly honest, I had us written off too. And you know me, I always tend to see the positive in things, but it felt like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, I just felt a bit down going into the game. I couldn't really be bothered going, even in the car on the way to the match. I know you went to the coach greeting. I couldn't get there in time for the coach greeting. But we were in the car and just like, you weren't really talking about the game. It was just kind of like we were going there because we were going there. We had to
sense of duty.
Yeah. But then as soon as I got into the ground, I had one pint and then I was just like, yeah, I'm up for this. You step out and the noise is brilliant. I don't know how well it came across on the telly, but the noise before the first kickoff was like no noise I'd ever heard in my life. Suarez had taken the kickoff and it comes as like a bit of a wave and it just starts. Then it just got louder and louder and louder and louder and louder until he kicked off the ball and then it's just a roar of come on. And that really set the tone for 90 minutes. Every time Barcelona had the ball, the whole crowd was booing them. And quite often we'll have those atmospheres where we'll start booing and then you kind of get bored of it more than anything else. So after about half an hour, you're just like, I've been booing these for the whole game. Like, how long can you boo for? But last night, it just didn't stop for the whole game. It was incredible.
What it did, and it was the best atmospheres, and we've had a few of them in recent years, Bailey, is that booing, but then we boo until a chorus of a song kicks off, and then everyone just starts singing that instead. And I referenced this last year in the Champions League run, and this is what the difference was. I think it's why it's helped us go up to another level. In 13-14, all we really had was booing, and we had the Suarez song. We had a couple of songs, but we've got so many songs, and we've not just got a couple of ones that you do one go of and that's it. You've got the Virgil van Dijk song and you've got the Roberto Firmino song and you've got you know, Ale, and you've got these songs that can go on. You can go for 5 minutes on these alone. So it was just this either was making it incredibly hostile or incredibly supportive, and it kind of went wherever it needed to go.
Yeah, and you don't get a break. You know, I loved that the Arsene Wenger post thing, the Arsene Wenger pre thing before when he was previewing it on BeIN Sports, and he was saying, "There's one ground in the world you don't want to have a second leg tie at, and that's Anfield. Yeah. Always has been, and it always will be because of exactly that." And you're right, being back in this Champions League, and from what Jurgen Klopp's done in terms of making us believe that we are the Titan that we thought we were 10 years ago. It's done wonders, and I genuinely, even when I watch it on the telly, I'm like, it's like an orchestra, like just to sit there and listen to that, because it rings around and it's poetic almost just listening to that, and to give it the fuck off Suarez in between sort of absolute into Ale Ale, into You Never Walk Alone, and just songs that are just like it's stunning.
We when you consider, we did a bit of this on, was it the build up show, and we talked about like it's 4 seasons since we played Real Madrid. Yeah. Under Brendan Rodgers and the team that we put out there, and it's funny because Chris got caught on camera doing this, but like giving Ronaldo a round of applause going off the pitch because he battered us, he was brilliant, and you know, we'll always do that to world class footballers who put in those kind of showings, but there was none of that. We didn't give them a chance to breathe, and like, you know, Chris is doing stats and tactics on the Messi stuff, and he's adamant that he had a brilliant game, and I'm like, great, so brilliant that he didn't score or get an assist, good on him. But we gave him a ton of time, and there was no like, oh, look, it's Messi. Oh, what a privilege it is to watch this wonderfully talented footballer. It was just, boo! Messi, boo, you prick!
Messi made the first mistake by trying to wind Andy Robertson up in the first few minutes. And if there's one person that the Anfield crowd won't let you try and wind up or try and have a go at, it's Andy Robertson. And again, it's just that kind of thing, the chorus and the whole roar of his name goes up. And then Messi's got everyone on his back from that point, and and
Suarez.
Yeah, Suarez did the same, trying to wind people up, and when they're on the pitch, we're behind them, and that makes them just feel 10 feet tall, going, you're trying to wind me up, but look, there's 50,000 people in the thing of my knee.
It's like that. It is that thing, isn't it, Russ? Like, we all do it. We're all more confident in when we've got our mates around us. It's why, like, you get a gang of lads, and they're more confident getting into fights. Now, imagine being in a situation where, because Messi's got this at the Nou Camp, I've never seen anything quite like the way they deify him, and the Messi and the bowing and all that stuff. It's astounding when you see it in person. But, like, there's, like, the best part of 54,000 people there who would just spark him out. If Andy Robertson went and pointed at him and went, go ahead, there'd be just, you know, having that behind you, it all feeds into it, because we were desperate to just tell these lads that they meant nothing to us and we wanted to destroy them.
I think before the first, like, I think Si's right, I think there's a respect was there for Messi, kind of thinking, you guys that went over, oh, go see Messi in the flesh, there is that.
But
as soon as the kickoff goes, I think you're right, they set the precedent for themselves of being quite gnarly and a bit of a pricks, and something that I've never seen from Messi before, because every time you see clips of him, or, you know, you watch him on telly, he's like, he's so good at football, and
the tricks and flicks.
Yeah, that's what you're seeing.
That makes him a better player for you.
Yeah, but I didn't expect that from him, because I've never seen him do it before, and it's such a shock when you watch it on telly first, like, and we spoke about it on the final word, just going, well, if that's how you want to play it, then Sam will do that. Suarez was, I kind of expected it from him, to be honest, but not to the extent that he went to. And then even before, and he was still doing mind games and stuff. And like, when you're 3-0 down, I think you take any margin that you can going into a game. We're going to get on top of you. And it's worked for us before. We showed games against City, Chelsea in 2005 and stuff. You know, it was a long time ago. We did it then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or even Olympiacos. It works. It's a psychology thing.
Teams come and go, Bailey. But crowds evolve. But you've still got core people there who carry it through, know how to behave in those kind of situations. You know, you got the old heads in the crowd, and the crowds move on far slowly than teams and managers and all that do. So it's relevant. Like those nights, those great nights. My dad talked about it on the final word, like St Etienne and Inter Milan in 65, I think it was. And that's like in the blood. It's a bloodline of Liverpool fans that carries through. And this feels now. This is the perfect marriage, and we saw it at the end in the celebrations with the players as well. It's the first time in Yonks that we've gotten back to this notion of everyone's on the same page.
Yeah.
We've got an elite level team and a fan base that's prepared to up its game in response and vice versa.
Yeah, and it's the interesting thing is, like, when you look at, like, the generations of pundits, they're saying, because it reflects with the fans, obviously, but you see the pundits' opinion, with Souness saying Anfield's the greatest place ever, to then Carragher saying it, to even now Trent coming out and saying it. Like, it doesn't change. If anything, it gets worse in terms of how hard it is to play there, because we've gone so long without a trophy. Every time that we get close, we're not going to let it go without a fight. And it's that. I think Barca got it wrong from the start. Letting Suarez take a kickoff. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing there?
Yeah.
Like, to piss off a crowd from minute one, when you can already hear how ready we are. That's like putting petrol on a fire.
I think that's an arrogance thing. I think Suarez, because how many times did we see opposition crowds boo Luis Suarez, or saying, Luis Suarez, we know what you are, and all that. And he'd just thrive off it and he'd buzz off it. But there was never. I think the fact that it was coming back to Anfield, and he even said that when he was doing them mind games, I think I'll probably get more claps than boos or something like that. How wrong he was there. The teams that we were playing didn't have the mental strength that this Liverpool side have got, and they didn't have the talent this Liverpool side have got.
Sterling comes back, he just stopped playing.
Yeah. But I don't think Sterling's got the strength that Suarez has got. I don't think Sterling thrives off the booing as much as Suarez does.
Yeah.
You see, like, Norwich every time.
So Suarez, the thing is, I think he just, Liverpool was a stepping stone to him, and as much as he would have loved his time, and, you know, and he, you know, he definitely would have, he tried to leave for Arsenal, and then look, you know, treat it how you want it, like, but no surprise that he bit someone before leaving a football club. I think he thinks Barcelona was his stage. He felt that was getting to the top stage, and we're like, and I think, you know, we've been a bit down in the dump since he left, because he's the best player we've had, who didn't want to play for us anymore.
Certainly for a couple of years.
Absolutely, and it's great just to be like. It's like walking back in and seeing your ex and just being in your peak of physical condition and being like,
it's literally that.
I'm better than you, and I always was better than you. Yeah. You caught me on a bit of a downward arc or whatever, but oh my God, I wouldn't even now. I wouldn't even throw it at me, and I wouldn't even go near you.
So spot on.
And I just love the fact that we were just, he obviously thought, you know, like he obviously considered how we'd react to him. We were just like, fuck off you little gobshite. I mean, and I'm sure in time to come,
I still adore him.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sure there'll become a time when we see him in a non-combative sense, people will be able to look back on it fondly, absolutely. But I love that in that sense. It's like, no, there's no love lost. We don't give a fuck about you. We give a fuck about us. You know, yeah. Luis Suarez's reputation for all the good memories he gave, all he did was he got us close to a title and then fucked off. So, yeah. You know, ultimately, great, good on you. I'm glad you've had a great career, but we're not going to let our love diminish our support for what's happening right here, right now. Yeah, so, yeah, bollocks to him. Like, I want to talk about Joel Matip. Sorry. And look, it's fair to say, I think he started the season as Liverpool's fourth choice centre-half. I think most of us were kind of largely happy with that. He has been phenomenal. I go all the way back to the Napoli game in the group stage when he put a massive header in right at the end and he broke his collarbone. Yeah. And he'd actually been in good form up to that. Goes out for a bit, and to be honest, I think a lot of us thought, oh, well, that'll be the end of it. Gomez will come back at some point, and or Lovren will get his place back. And Gomez's injury was longer. Lovren was just Lovren. And Joel Matip got back to fitness, got back in the side, and to the point now where I've got no qualms or complaints about Joel Matip as a centre-half in any way, shape or form. I think he has been great, and I think he was exceptional.
He's been unbelievable. I think he deserves every praise in the world for what he's done this season, because I think Klopp would have been, if a decent offer had come in for him in the summer, Klopp probably would have been all right to let him go, and that's, I don't think anyone would have missed him, really. No. Mm. But you'd miss him now if he was.
If
to
someone
go
had come
summer.
In with like 15 or 20 million, yeah. say, which is still a lot, yeah. I just think that's a lot of money. You know, we would have felt that last summer. I think we'd have all gone, okay, fine, go ahead.
And to go from that, where he's behind Dejan Lovren and Joe Gomez, who Lovren's had all sorts of problems, and the fans don't particularly like him, some don't anyway. Mm-hmm. Joe Gomez, who as talented as a kid, and Matip's behind them, to go from probably, he'll probably start in the Champions League final in a few weeks, and it'd be really unfair on him if he didn't start in the Champions League final, no matter how fit Joe Gomez is.
Yeah.
He deserves every praise in the world, and I know Van Dijk helps him. Van Dijk helps everyone that he plays alongside, and he's playing
that's no criticism of the player, is it?
And all that. No, but it's game after game after game. He's just been pretty much faultless. He's been so dominant. He's so good on the ball. He creates chances. He can dribble with the ball and beat men. he's enjoyable to watch as a centre back. He's been fantastic.
The big criticism of him, Ross, was I think he was a bit passive. Like, you didn't trust him in a battle. And in some respects, I said this a few months ago, he was our prototype Van Dijk. I think we bought him to do the job that Virgil does, because he's kind of got that. He's big in the air. He's good on the ball. He doesn't dive into tackles. He likes to let things play out, but he's a bit, he doesn't have that when, he never had that when you needed to go in and be an absolute prick and go and get into a fight. He never was seen to be able to transition between that. I don't have that complaint about Joel Matip anymore.
No, that's one of the best bits of, you know, those weaknesses that he had. I think even control on the ball, he reminded me of Sacco at times, just thinking his composure wasn't there. Yeah. Now I'm sound with it, going into a tackle, you know, if it's a header or on the ground. You know, he's got the fight determination to go and win the ball. And, you know, I think you get caught up because he's been there for so long. He's like, well, come up to 3 years now. I think, you know, you've had your chance. You're not going to improve on those things. And he has done. And he come back to the competition that Klopp's created in that side of going, you know, with Lovren getting injured all the time and Gomez, you know, you need to step up now, and he hasn't done sound. And the other thing as well is we bang on about Chamberlain and Robertson. Matip was free.
Yes.
It cost a penny.
Yeah.
Fucking stupid. Yeah, no. And he's got a brother. I found out yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what his brother's called?
Oh, Chris told me this. Go on, top for the audience.
Marvin.
Marvin Matip.
Marvin Matip.
Fantastic.
And actually, fun fact, Joseph Desiree Job used to play for Middlesbrough. He's his cousin.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah, there's knowledge. There's knowledge there. Yeah.
Cameroonian football incest. Yeah, is that what this is like? Everyone just all footballers just keeping it together.
Family tree.
Yeah.
Bring their songs. His dad.
I bet. It's dead. It's defo dead thin and branchy, isn't it? The Matip family tree. Like, I've been absolutely made up with him and Bailey. The thing again, Luis Suarez. He'll have been given an option. Most centre forwards have the option. Because most people play one up front, sort of variation there on, and you've got to pick your battle. Are you going to pick the battle against Virgil van Dijk? You're not really, are you? Mm. So you're going to go against whoever Liverpool's other centre-half is. And I said this on the final way, but Suarez will have been rubbing his hands together. He'd been looking at Joel Matip and going, he's a bit tall, he's a bit awkward, I like to get in and around people, I'll push him, I'll bully him out of this game. Matip had none of it. He was throwing Suarez to one side, he was beating him to the ball, he was dominating him in the air, and he wasn't being flustered when he was in possession as well. Again, just how he handled himself in that game was commendable.
And it's not even just this game. Like, you go back, definitely in the away leg, Matip was better than Virgil van Dijk. I think he had a better performance. You can go back and look at the last few performances he had prior to that. He's been on the same level, if not exceeding that level. And obviously, because he's not got the aura of Van Dijk, and just sort of basically before it kicks off, you know Van Dijk's going to be immense. But it's another sort of tale for me that you look at other teams in the league, look at like Chris Smalling and Phil Jones for United. You know, they are their first choice centre halves, and like he's our fourth. And that's testament to the fact that, and it goes on into the summer transfer window, people are going to be chomping at the bit to sit on our bench. Yeah. Let alone be in our first team,
yeah.
Because they know the levels of game that the levels of their own game that will be raised by this team.
Well, we're in a situation not too long ago where I think we were probably getting into January and we were all going, okay, Van Dijk and Gomez sound, but I get rid of Matip and I'll get rid of Lovren, and now and there's a few players that fall into this, like Divock Origi being a great example of it. Si, you're like, well, there's just no point.
No,
as long as he's happy to fight for his place and play a degree of a part. Like Matip is different to Origi in this sense, is that Matip, if he continues to play at this level, he'll just partner Virgil van Dijk. You know what I mean? He will be our first choice partner for Van Dijk. So again, that's what we're talking about this battle, this fight for competition or whatever. It shows the mental strength of him and a number of those players there that he's absolutely prepared to stand up for the fight. And I honestly didn't think he possessed
it. It's just another testament to the atmosphere the Klopp must have in the training ground. Because how often have we seen these players who you think have been shut out a little bit? Origi, Moreno came in and had a good run of form before he got injured, and Robertson rightly took his place. Matip, Lovren's done it a bit as well, where like you'll get took out the team, but Klopp will be telling them on the training ground, look, you're not in the team at the minute, but I still trust you as a player. Yeah. And he fills them with this belief. So when they do need to come back into the side, then they're ready. And he's obviously training them well to know to be ready and making them watch the players who are playing well on the pitch at the time. I still think Joe Gomez is probably his first choice partner for Van Dijk, but like and rightly so, because he was fantastic in the first half of the season, and the fact he's so young that his ceiling can get higher and higher and higher. But we play so many games that Matip sticks around. He still plays an awful lot of games for us next season, and the fact that we still don't know how well we can rely on Joe Gomez's fitness.
And there's no rush with him. There's no need to be like,
it gives us the option
to play every game because we've got no quality. It's like, again, now I'm just like you said to me, you said before, Joe Matip starts the Champions League final. Okay,
fine. Yeah. Who would have thought when if you'd have said when Gomez the week before Gomez broke his leg against Burnley, Gomez is barely going to play for the rest of the season, you'd think, shit. You'd think, well, what are we going to do? Because you don't know how much you can trust either the fitness, and that's another thing that Matip's done very well.
Yeah.
He's kept fit, and he broke his collarbone for going in for the challenge.
Yeah.
Like, you can't legislate for that, and that's a heroic bit of defending.
Yeah.
One of the criticisms of Matip is that he hasn't been able to stay fit, and touch wood, he can stay fit for the rest of the season, and then going into next season. But that shows that he's been training properly, he's been looking after himself properly, which is more than you can be said except for Lovren. Like.
Yeah.
The bigger picture as well, you know, you go into the transfer window, Klopp said it, didn't he? And I think everyone thought he was taking a piss, going, there's not many better centre-backs than Lovren and Matip. Turned out he was right. So, you know, there's other areas in the pitch that we need to improve in the summer. Well, are you getting better left-back or centre-halves? And you are, but you're spending £80-90 million of your budget rather than going getting back up for
no
Matip need. And Marnie, whatever
no
else.
Need, isn't it? Alisson Becker. Ross, he's a beautiful man, we know this. He was exactly the goalkeeper that we needed in that game of football. When you looked at it, you looked at the comparison with him and Ter Stegen, and he made everything look absolutely effortless. You know, he's making saves, he's getting down low, he's pushing them away, he's catching things, his distribution was spot on, etc. And it's just that total confidence that he exudes. And you consider, like, it's funny, isn't it? Because I always do this, and I always have done this throughout my history being a Liverpool fan, is you see the best in the players that you've got there. I was prepared to see a bright future for your ego biscans, and looking your Loris Karius's of this world, but you know, you consider now it seems astonishing that we've managed to do anything at all without a goalkeeper as good, and now that we've got him, you realise just what we've been missing.
I think it's difficult to judge sometimes because he has very little to do, doesn't he? Because our defence and midfield are so good, but that's the difference in having a good goalkeeper and a world class goalkeeper when he's called upon to go and do something, make the save. Yeah. And it's not just last night. You can name a handful of games that he's, and more than that probably, that he's on the season, like Napoli in the group stage that you already mentioned before. Yeah. He doesn't make that big save. We're not sat here talking about beating Barcelona because we would have been out, and to get EP last night, you know, when Jordi Alba's through, I convinced myself in precisely 2 seconds that they'd scored.
Mm.
But you know, it's right. When you got him in there, just sticks his hand out. He knows, and he's got the confidence to go and do it as well. And it's not often, because you think of Fabinho and you're thinking, right, sound, get past him. You've got Van Dijk, get past him. If that ever happens, you've got Alisson there as well. And just thinking, if you're on the team, just give up.
Yeah, we were always going to need Alisson in that game last night, because we were 3-0 down against Barcelona. We were always going to have to take risks, push our fullbacks on. We're talking about this on the Man of the Match show on the website now. It was a great show, actually. You're pushing your fullbacks on, and your midfielders have got to try and get into the box like they were. And you know, maybe Mane isn't going to be able to track back as much because you need them up there to try and hit them on the counter. There was always going to be times where Messi or Suarez or the others were going to get chances. And every time he did, Alisson was there to make the save, and he just did it without any sort of force. And then when he had the ball at his feet, there was no pressure. He was just moving the ball on, and it took the pressure off us so much, and he was faultless.
It resonates with the crowd as well, doesn't it? I think like even go back 12 months where we bought him, we're in that situation, the ball's getting passed back, like he's just
get rid of it. There was one moment, I said, I've not mentioned this anywhere else. There's a fella behind and to the right of me, and he was there a few weeks ago, and I think I mentioned him then that he just doesn't rate Trent Alexander-Arnold. He thinks he's a liability, and he needs to improve the defensive side of this game, suspect. That's your job, lad. That's your job. And I couldn't. And I just went, you know what? It's defo not his job. His job isn't to defend. That's not Trent Alexander-Arnold's job. Like, you know, like he's got one line job description. Defend, lad. You know what I mean? Like, and he's like, you know, there's so much more to his game than that. But he also had the great chat when you realise, because the fellow who's directly behind me was buzzing because he started chatting shit again. And we took a throw-in and Alisson controlled it. And it was a little bit of like a heart-stopping moment. And he went, pick it up for so. And I normally have to go, just let it go. The fella behind me, because he was so well, he was going, pick it up! You can't pick it up for the throw! He went, you defo can't pick it up for a throw. You could! And I was like, I might be being even optimistic by saying it's been 15 years since they changed that rule. I never knew that. And it's like, oh my, well, fucking shut up then. Like, because if you don't know the rules of footy, then don't be like, I bet he's been screaming at people at the telly. Like, oh, he's terrible, this goalkeeper. Why is he not, you know, like, hating footballers because he's fundamentally doesn't understand the rules?
Yeah.
He stood clearly next to the goalkeeper. It's an open goal. Why is he? He's offside, mate.
Did you notice Jordi Alba was throwing yesterday?
I don't think they took one throw-in in that entire game that was a proper throw-in.
Did you see the referee that refereed that game also refereed Argentina versus Nigeria, and the referee afterwards in an interview said, I'm a self-proclaimed Messi lover. That's in an article. Yeah. He's an absolute Messi super fan, and he refereed that game.
Brilliant.
Yeah, the throw-ins were shit. Throw-ins every time.
As the game went on, the people in the stands were getting more and more irate, because you can always tell there's a few things. It's like when people move forward and everyone starts kicking off about the original position of where you should be, and then of course you just got just grown men gesticulating wildly.
That kind of stuff, though, it's just another thing to wind up the crowd and it makes the crowd louder, and it means Barca are shitting themselves a bit more, and it actually means the ref might end up being more likely to make some decisions in our favour, because he's scared, he's a little bit scared, as you would be. But
did get a wonderful shout of, these are shit, these. Yeah. From behind me, man. You know things are going well when you get the deep scouse voice of, get into these are shit. Favourite moments from the match? Anyone want to throw any out there?
Fucking Trent's corner.
Genie's third goal. Genie's second goal, our third.
All of it.
Let's start with the corner. A moment of absolute genius.
I've still watched it about 20 million times though, in between recording shows, just got to watch the highlights again and just think there's different stories. I think someone said now, it's been reported the ball boy gave him the ball that quickly and went, this is on.
He got name checked in an article. He's like 14 year old with his name
checked. Yeah, Sy Hughes. I was trying to hear what it was.
Yeah. He's going to remember his contribution to that game for the rest of his life, and you would do, wouldn't you? Imagine being that 14 year old lad who rolls the ball out of the
temple. It was a mad sequence of events because I was watching it with my dad. And when he won the corner originally, that's like dead mature that. Then the commentator went, real mature person. And I was like, yeah. And I went like that. And he just went, it's Van Origi. And I was like, that. And the goal went in. It was just like, just bedlam. And it was just like, just one of the moments. Just fucking brilliant.
The wherewithal Bailey to just decide in that environment, at that time of a football match, against that opposition, just to try for shits and giggles, I'm just going to boot at the early corner and see what happens. And
yeah.
I mean, and that's that. This is why it's one of the perfect moments. And the Genie's second goal is also one of these perfect moments. But for this one, Divacari, he just misses that. Like, he's meant, you know, you're meant to, the referee's meant to pull that back for some reason.
Yeah.
Or you're meant to not, you're meant to miss it and you look like an absolute tit because you've tried something clever and it's not come off. Or it does get to the player and Origi's not looking and it hits his arse and we all fume on Origi. Or Origi does see it like he does and he puts it into Rose Ed because it's Divock Origi, etc., etc. Except Trent switches on, he plays the quick corner, Origi gets to it, he hits it in perfectly in the absolute perfect place within the goal. And not just that, but that's the fourth goal. That's the goal that means that we've not just got the goals to take us to extra time.
Yeah,
it's taken us through to the final.
It's just giddy, and it's like, it's the fact that it's him, right, 20-year-old Trent, and it's like just Iceman. Like, how do you get that corner and just think? He's like, oh, he's on. And then just literally, the fact he apologises when they're going around interviewing the players on the pitch, and he's like, probably hit that a bit too hard at him. And it's like, what? It's like, mate, you've literally just won us a title. To be fair to Origi, that took a bobble of a good, 2 feet? Yeah. And he has to, like, lift his foot into it, and that's a world-class finish. But it just felt, everything on that night was just perfect.
I don't want to take issue with, not an issue, but, like, Origi's celebration. Because, like,
he doesn't know how to celebrate.
Just in general, when he scores goals, like, even, like, Newcastle one, he's like,
Everton, when he takes the goal, it's like,
yeah, but he's like, well, yeah, why are you taking the ball back? You don't see, like proper, like, facial, like, you know, expression or
I prefer that.
Just, like, he just looks confused.
Well, yeah. How is this?
I think he always looks a little bit confused anyway, to be honest. Even when there was a few times when he was holding the ball up, when he's got, like, world-class defenders around him, and he's, like kind of like goofily like bobbling through them, and then
shouldn't be here.
He comes away with the ball and then just lays it off or whatever. Like, he always just looks a little bit goofy, but I think that just adds to how much I love watching.
This is the degree to which, like, you know, I'm in the stands going like, what the hell is this happening in front of me? How am I here? How have I come to this? Like, we're only, I always reference it, like, but you know, we're like 4 years from the 10-year anniversary of Istanbul when I was just so deeply, deeply upset, and I never thought we'd ever see anything like that. And we've been, I might never see it as get to a European Cup final again, let alone win one. And we're about to go to our third European final since then. And there's a degree to Origi, which he must be like, couldn't get a game for Wolfsburg last year. Like, I got booted. No, I've not kicked a ball. I barely kicked a ball in anger. This is the team got to the European Cup final. They wanted me for some reason. And now Jürgen seems to think I'm better than Daniel Sturridge. I'm better than all this stuff.
I genuinely think these guys will look back on that like in the third person. You know, like when you just, it's just
out of body experience.
Yeah, just dream state. I reckon that when they try and think about exactly what happened, you can't. Because the crowd takes over and the moment takes over and you just play for the badge. You just, because you, like, nobody would look at Shaqiri and Divock Origi and be like, you're better than PK, Alba, Langley, Ter Stegen in goal. You know, it's a team that has just won the La Liga like 2 games to go.
Yeah.
But they played like they were gods. You know, they played like, there's experiences you have like that, you know, absolute world-changing experiences, especially sporting events. You look back and you're like, I don't know how I've done that.
Yeah.
I don't know where in my body I bought that performance from. And I feel like every single 11 on that pitch and the substitutes that came on just played out of themselves. It was brilliant.
But it's another testament to the manager, isn't it, Si, that Origi's even there. Like, not one of us would have kept Origi. You know, we were look at the options. I think I'd have defo kept Ings over Origi.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see more of Solanke, and I just thought he's a bit bigger, he's a bit more of a top man. Everything I saw in pre-season, I just thought Origi was a bit crap. He looks like a lad who's absolutely on his way.
Yeah.
And same, you know, obviously similar with Solanke. We know Solanke went. And yet we've kept this lad, and this is not meant to happen. When you keep, like, I remember Andrei Voronin. So we had Andrei Voronin, and we got him. Yeah, I know. We got Andrei Voronin, and he was actually all right when we signed him, and then when we signed him, he was crap. So we sent him out on loan, and he was brilliant on loan, and we brought him back, and we're like, well, he's been brilliant on loan, and then he was crap again. That's what's meant to happen. Lads are meant to be not good enough for Liverpool, and they are never good enough for Liverpool. Whereas under this manager,
it just goes back to all that belief that he's instilled in every aspect of the football club. Firstly, you've got the owners believing him, and then he's got the players believing him. He's obviously got all the fans believing in him now. But it must just be on that training ground. Everyone must just, every word he says, they must just believe every word he says as absolute gospel. Yeah. He must just be like a higher figure to them.
I'll put the gauntlet down and I say I think he's the best manager in the world right now. I've made this argument yesterday on Twitter. It's depending on whether you define success as winning trophies. Yeah. That's up to you. That is what he needs to put a full stamp on it. But
to make it to cast it in gold, you know what I mean, and make it like an absolutely bulletproof argument. But I think you're right, and I think so much as the expression I've started to use, I think it's a good, because people love absolutes. But I think it's fair to say there are no better managers than him. Which is to say that there are probably other managers at that top level, but there's no one who's going to do a better job at Liverpool than Jürgen Klopp.
My argument is obviously, if you're judging being in the Premier League and if you're taking that as the hardest league in the world, you have to discount managers that are also with Juventus and with Barcelona at the time that are doing really well in their own domestic leagues, but they're not in the Premier League. So for Guardiola to do it in two leagues and then come over to us, we never had the backing that Pep Guardiola has had. He hasn't had a fan base that he's had to turn completely on its head and reinstill belief in them again that they can be the club that they once were. Look at the trophies that we have around us at the minute. And it's that, I don't think another man can do that. Like, I look at, when, like, I ignore questions, it was like, when Klopp goes, like, I don't want to think about when Klopp goes, because I don't think we could ever fill his shoes.
Yeah.
And that's the scary thing, and that's why I feel like he is where he is, and I get the point, because unless you are a Liverpool fan and you are in this moment, you can't take that argument seriously. But like I say, being in the group that are, I just that's the only way I can see it.
It's the perfect blend of everything, isn't it, Ross? You know, we were looking at, and this is why Man City have got exactly the same thing, in that, and that's why we're the two absolute elite clubs in this country and in the clutch of the truly elite clubs in world football right now. Because we have got one of the no better managers than ... We've got the same for goalkeeper. We've got the same for our leading centre half. You could start to make the case for that for the DM in Fabinho. And then, okay, we've got a clutch of other players who kind of make it happen. But I don't think you need to have a world class player in every position. But then again, you've got probably two who play up front as well. Left back, yeah, right back. We're here because we finally managed to put all of these things together. It's not, in the past we've had world class manager Rafa Benitez, totally let down by the overall quality of his squad. We've had world class, best in the world players. We had like the third best player in world football when Suarez was at us. I think it's fair to say.
I'd say Gerrard was up there.
And Gerrard, Gerrard maybe on the way down. But you had that one talent, man, like Portugal, kind of with Ronaldo kind of stuff. Yeah. You've got one guy who's just better than everyone else and he drags the team along. And a manager, he was okay, but not quite at that level, etc., etc. The best teams in world football have it across the board, and we finally have
I think you can go further than that as well. I think something we spoke about the other days, the board and the owners.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to when we had like Rafa and stuff that went tits up because we had Bell and owners, and now we've got the team, the manager, the transfer committee, the whole board and the owners. They're all fighting for one same cause and they're all on the same page.
Yeah.
They all understand each other, and there's nothing that's going on behind the scenes that's negative. Even the stuff that we do off the pitch is just kind of like for me, the club now have just got everything spot on. Like everything is nailed on that they do for, I don't know, community or, you know, the way they engage with with us as fans, like either in person or on social media. I think they're amazing at that. And that resonates. You know, we joked about before about the West Brom thing.
Yeah.
That's where it all stems from for me. And like, you know, people take the piss out of it. But, you know, again, last night, that happens because there's a synergy between everyone at the club. Yeah. Including ourselves.
Talking about the owners, and I think they have been fantastic for a while now. I think it's down to Klopp that as well, you know.
Yeah.
He's bringing everyone.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Together, and he's like, "No, this is how we should do things." Because they were football people when they came in, and they showed that they brought in Kenny Dalglish, which was probably the right decision at the time. And they said, "Right, so here's this money," and he went and signed Stuart Down and Andy Carroll and players like that. Because they did that because they didn't really know any better at the time.
Yeah.
And then Rodgers came in. And you couldn't really say Rodgers' signings on the whole were a success. Obviously, he brought some great players in.
Well, he built himself up, and he did a brilliant job. And again, they were blown away by him, and he had a good vision. But he was limited by his own experience. And he said it was great fun, but he was a good manager for the level we were at the time. Don't forget, he's put the foundations in place for Klopp, of course. Yeah. But when he doubled down, he had to double down on himself and didn't have the ability to back it up, unfortunately. Yeah. Whereas, like, as your cops come in and just like, okay, who's in charge of this? Okay, yeah, no, they're fine to do that. Like, everyone's more empowered when they're given the breathing room to do their best jobs to the best of their abilities.
He walked into a fan base that had a lot of potential but wasn't acting at the best way it could. A squad that had potential, and he's brought in players that have potential and brought the best out of them. Owners that had a good potential, they've got the funds to do it. They've probably got the heart in pretty much the right place on the whole. And he's just brought out the best potential out of every single one of them. And turned them all into world class fan base, world class players, world class owners, world class club.
The manager that comes closest to it, and it's going to sound obscure to people who aren't Liverpool fans, is Fergie. You know, it took him 3 seasons. He was on the verge of being sacked.
Yeah.
He hadn't won anything yet. And it was then the next 10 years where the success came.
Yeah.
And that's the patience that is what we're waiting for. Everything is there but the silverware.
Yeah, Jürgen's earned it, hasn't he, Ross? You know, this way. You know, he's unlocked funds. When people go, well, Liverpool have spent blah, blah, blah. It's just, there was some video Chris showed me before of one of these fucking terrible YouTube channels and Instagram thing and all that kind of shite, and it was fans of other clubs saying, why do you date Liverpool to win the title? And so someone go, they've spent this kind of money, and some of them are my friends on there, and they're all knobheads because they just take these top line Twitter reactions to things. Liverpool spends £150 million on the defence, and we got to a fucking Champions League
conceded
final.
Conceded 22 goals in the league.
And sold someone for £150 million.
We sold our best player and reinvested it, not on just another frivolous forward. We went and built a solid foundation. Klopp, we've been in Europe 3 times in 4 seasons under Jürgen Klopp, and he's taken us to the final every single time. We've, in 2 seasons running now, we will have earned almost the most money you can possibly earn from the Champions League.
Yep. And there's so many hurdles that have, you know, that are in that of, like, you know, losing finals and stuff. You still have to remotivate those players to be able to go and do it again. Yeah, and he lost his assistant manager halfway through the season, which, you know, everyone compared it to what's Paco.
Liam Mafra,
I'm thinking.
Gerard talks about how much of an impact.
Yeah, exactly. The fan base lost their heads at certain points, and, you know, when we drew 2 games, they were the reasons why. Or, like, the whole Nabil Fekir thing. As much as we hate it, we still bang about it now as fans and going, "Well, that's the reason we've done this." He's just gone not arse. He doesn't see things as obstacles. He's just like,
it's just got
solutions, not problems.
He's got an aura of a man that when you walk into the room, everyone just hushes. You're like. And, like, it takes a special kind of respect to demand that from people. And I think that's exactly why when Virgil van Dijk met Klopp, he was like, yes, I buy into you as an individual, as a person, because I believe in your ethos. And I think that's why we're way past the point of, you know, if a Suarez or a Torres left, we were done for years. And whereas if a Salah or a Mane left, it would be tough. But I've got no doubt in my mind we could replace.
We'd have replacements lined up ready to go before we did things like that as well. Riggy. Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, promoting, getting the best of what you've got, Klopp's thing, isn't it? You know, what I loved most about, there's many things I loved most about last night, so this is not true, but one of the things I really enjoyed was Klopp's reaction, and I think it's the BT Sport post-match interview, and apart from the fact that he called them fucking mentality monsters, which is great, but he's even surprised by how good this team is. Like, he's kind of like, I've given them all these things, I'm just doing my thing, and he's blown away by how much they've taken it and ran with it. He had no expectation of Liverpool doing that. He's not taught Trent to do that. He's not gone. This is not a game plan for him to score that goal. Same way as some of the players deciding it on themselves for Gini's goal the other week from the set piece. He's not the one who's told Jadon Sancho to take the free kick against Newcastle. The players have decided this on the pitch because they've grown. They've taken his basis and they've built on it themselves. And you can see him. He's being interviewed and he was like a fan. If you'd interviewed any of us after that, it was like hand on the head. Like he's playing it back in his mind's eye. Like, God, that was amazing. Wasn't it great when they did that? Did you see them do that? All I did was tell them to put the shirts on and go out and play some football. And then they basically came up with all this. And that's the thing of it for me, is that that's how good we are. We're sat here talking about how good Jürgen Klopp is. This side actually might even be better than that.
But again, it does all come back to him. He's the one that's built it, and he's the one that's got the best out of these players. Who, well, not maybe Fabinho was like at a really elite level when they came to Liverpool, and he's the one who's got the best out. Salah was a top player, but he was nowhere near as good as he is now. Same with Mane.
The only player I think we've bought, because what we've done is very sensible.
Alisson.
Yeah, and we've bought actually quite a few, you know, players who are at the peak or just about to enter the very, very peak of the past. Liverpool changed the transfer method, but that's fine because we've still improved them, because you're right. Like, Sadio Mane come in at the right age, Salah's come at the right age, Alisson's come at the right age, Fabinho, Van Dijk, Matip, you could argue, as well. And they were all ready to take that next step up, and no one could have foreseen them all. I mean, maybe Van Dijk and Alisson, but no one would have thought Sadio Mane was going to be one of the best players on the planet. Everyone would have just thought he could have just easily been another one of them, you know, flatter to deceive. Good, he's got some skills, but maybe he goes missing for spells of, you know, games or spells of the season, what have you.
Pedro, Willian, Mkhitaryan, players like that.
Exactly. And as it is, we're taking kids and making them brilliant. We're taking journeymen players like James Milner and making them even better. We're taking,
I adore James Milner. So seeing him crying, when you said what was your favourite moment of the game, it wasn't actually the game. It was the celebrations on the pitch at the end.
Yeah.
I just love everything about that. I love the fact that Trent does a lap of honour the whole pitch after everyone else has got off, and as he's going round, there's just a roar, like, go on, Trent. I love the video where they're singing "You Never Walk Alone," and then it cuts to the Kenny Dalglish and Marina waving their arms in the crowd. I just love everything about that, and that's what Liverpool is to me. As good as everything is on the pitch, it's feeling that togetherness between the players and the fans, and seeing the greatest legend this club's ever had there with his wife loving it, like two Scottish people who've come down and took to the city as their own and took to the club as their own. And feeling the same emotions that we all do, or because this football club brought everything together, that's the biggest thing for me.
No, I completely agree with that. Right, we're going to move on because I guess we have to, really. I could literally sit in just
we covered this anywhere else today.
In the magnificent. We have, if you need more of this chat, we've got the final whip. Hold that underarm for me. The final word show is on the RedmenTV.com. The Man of the Match podcast is on the RedmenTV.com. And the Stats and Tactics show is incoming on the RedmenTV.com. So if you're not ready to talk about Wolves, that's fine. You can pause this here in a second and you can go over to the website and fill your boots. Hours and hours and hours of just really, really happy Liverpool fans, varying degrees of depth and detail. Some of it's more, you know, again, just sitting back and marvelling on all the big things and the emotions and stuff. And then again, you've got Chris delving into the nuts and bolts of how it all happened for us. We've got you covered. It's the perfect time to subscribe to the website because Liverpool are going to Madrid and we're going to be here all the way and beyond as well. So, yes, go over to there and get on. One more thing to plug before we dig into Wolves. In addition to that, Chris and I have got a brand new podcast. It's the Machen Page Act podcast. It's got its own YouTube channel and it's on Spotify and it's on iTunes, etc., etc. I decided that I can't stand football. Twitter is a little bit on that. We've lived in this world where the team we hate most in this world, Manchester United, have just been incredible for most of our adult lives, well, childhoods and adult lives. So I've enjoyed plenty of times when things have fallen off for them. But the problem is that used to exist in our heads, and it maybe used to exist in little pockets in pubs and bars and on the school ground or whatever. And now it exists constantly 24/7 in your face. And it is wearying. I am so tired of football this season because it's hard enough supporting your football team whilst also balancing kids and a life and a fucking mortgage and a business and all this. And then you've just got, and it's not, I'd love to say it was loads of fucking weirdo virgins in the bedrooms, but it's not. It's grown men. It's grown weirdo not virgins and all kinds of people from all sorts of weird walks of life and social backgrounds and all that who have just seemed to think that this is how you're meant to communicate about football. Cool, we'll annotate to that. We'll leave a link in the description. MHX Page Act, the MHX Page Act podcast, that was number 3.
You
will be number 3 or number 4.
So that's not out yet?
No, it will be out though.
It'll be out on Friday, yeah.
Yeah, Si's frantically sat here not editing.
It's a good job I've edited that clip.
Yeah. So let's talk about Wolves, Si.
Yeah, no thanks.
We've got a league to win on Sunday. it's not completely in our hands, but that win last night will have put the shits up a little bit. It's one of them where it must get into their heads where they're thinking, you know, is it meant to be for them? You know, look at what they can do. If they can beat Barcelona 4-0, then Brighton can get a draw against us at whatever the stadium's called.
Yeah. Amex, is it?
It is.
Still?
Yeah, it is the Amex. So it's one of them that'll get into City's heads. And look at the last two games that City have had, the Burnley and Leicester. They struggled to break them down until midway through the second half. Brighton are a tight defensive side. We struggled against them at Anfield, I think it was only 1-0 at Anfield.
Really early on in the season, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you never know what could happen. All we can do is go out and the atmosphere is going to be amazing on Sunday afternoon. Even if we don't win, the lap of honour at the end of the game the fact that we've got to send them on to Madrid. But even if not, we'd be up for giving them every praise that they deserve for the season that they've given to us. And I'm really looking forward to Sunday afternoon.
It's hard to imagine City dropping points because they've hit that real champions form. You know, like we're saying about us, and that's why there's a put a piece of paper between the two clubs at the moment, and that's why it is the way it is. But for as much as we've got all these stories, they've got them too, and you can't not see Phil Foden scoring the other week, and you can't not see Vincent Kompany smacking one in the top bin, completely out the blue, as anything other than a sign that points towards it. And that's why, we, as Liverpool fans, we kind of got to hope that the game, Brighton just keep it close. Mm-hmm. If City, I think, look, if City blow them away in the first half an hour and they get a few goals, I think it will be done and dusted. But yeah. We should take encouragement from the fact that they're playing away. Brighton will have the fans; they'll want to give them a bit of support. You know, they've managed to stay up. They get to you know, look to positivity, look to the future, and what have you. And if it is tight. Because they've got nothing to play for. If they somehow manage to keep in the game, there might come a point where they just go, "Ah, go on, we'll just give it one big push for a laugh and see what happens." And you know, Chris Hughton's got a reputation as a manager to hopefully build. And if he manages to take even a kingmaker in this scenario, then. You know, I'm very much dreaming up the positive scenarios here, but that's what we've got to kind of hope for.
Yeah, and you know, the amount of times I've watched City this season, I've tried to tell myself I don't care if it goes away. I'm going to tell myself City have won this game, and anything else is a bonus. You end up saying that, the game comes around, you watch it, and you cry because you're like, I wanted to get those points there, but because of what happened last night, whether we win the league or not, I don't care because I'm at the point now where. I feel like it's in chess. You've got a stalemate. You know, we've taken the Champions League from Manchester City, which is what they really want. Mm. You know, we're in the final now. Okay, City could win the league, but I'm at a point now where I think Mel Reddy is the one that said it best. You know, they've won 13 games on the bounce, scored 26, conceded 3, beat Arsenal, Chelsea, United, and Spurs in that space of time. And it's like, fair enough. And you know what? If this had not happened last night, this would have been hard to take. Really miserable. But because of this, you know, the best way I could describe it is like a Tom and Jerry sketch. Like when there's a pie sat on a windowsill and Jerry's like floating towards it in the air. That's me going to Madrid. Yeah. You know, and if we can hit City with a frying pan on the way through, that'd be nice. But
I'm just
leave a frying pan thing in bits of company's big head.
Just grab the Premier League trophy and float that all the way to Madrid with us as well. Exactly. Like, you know, it's right. And you know, that's the way, isn't it? We talked about this on the match build up show, which will be on the YouTube channel as well. But there's just a great sense of pressure being off. This one was, I think, we'll go out there, we'll be able to appreciate this for what this is now, is that we just go there, we just continue to support this brilliant team, and come what may, if we can support our team and back them to do the business, then that's all we can do, that's all we can focus on. And if somehow, you know, Brighton manage to get something out of City, then my God, Liverpool will deserve to be champions.
It's still difficult to wrap your head around, isn't it? Because, you know, I think we spoke before, if I go 2-2 at Newcastle, to being deflated and go, well, this is it. Divock pops up, sound Monday. Oh, Leicester are getting something here.
But a week away from Mo Salah lying on the turf, 2-2, and you're thinking, he's gone. The Champions League's gone, and everything's done. And the
company puts one in top bin. You're just like, okay, deflation again. And last night, and like, I keep drifting off, like doing this. Just like,
are you okay?
just follow.
You need to be more scintillating, I think.
Just full of hope again. What parts is where he cuts that thing where he's dancing latex ball? Just Glenn Murray, just glancing one of the other things. I should
Would
be
you
doing
like
this.
Me to lap dance for you.
But it's a good blow to have to go, actually, do you know what? 97 points. We can appreciate it now, whereas before we kind of like, yeah, but there's nothing there. And you've got Madrid as like an incentive to like be happy again. Yeah. And it's like, so I'm fine with that.
You know, and ultimately, it's not like we haven't won the European Cup here. Sorry, we've just gotten to the final, and obviously we'll know on the night of recording this who's going to be facing us in Madrid, of course. So still a game to go, but it does feel, it's right in so much as saying that, isn't it, that this would have been absolutely devastating. If we'd gone out how we were meant to go out against Barcelona, even if we'd gone out heroically, you'd still be going, because you then... We're back to this fucking horrible world of our happiness being dependent on another shit football team that we don't care about. Like, we've got to start caring about Brighton all of a sudden. Yeah. I don't care anymore. If it happens, it happens.
It can't be bad for us, I don't think. If City go and win the league, then fine. Like, I think we kind of resign to that after company fucking slotted that in on Monday night. If we do, then it's the biggest party that the city's ever seen, and you can go out and enjoy it.
And we've got
a 29-year thing off our back. That's obviously the dream, but if it doesn't happen, fine. As I say, we'll give them all a big cheer off the pitch and give them all a "You'll Never Walk Alone," and then see them in the European Cup final in a few weeks.
The encouraging thing about getting back to the Champions League final, what it tells me, and this is something I've known for a little while, Bailey, is that we will be back again and strong next season. I don't know where if we'll be 94, 95, 97 points strong, because it's a very difficult thing to do.
Exactly.
But it's more the fact that we'll be in contention again, because we've shown that it's very hard to get to a Champions League final. And any of the criticisms or the doubts that were sown by other people, to be honest, last season, of like, well, you had no one on the way. You only had to beat Roma, who were not even like the second best team in Italy, you know, not even, you know, at that point. Well, if we manage to do it, you know, we've made a final this time around, having beaten everyone. We've beaten all comers. We've beaten the hardest teams you can have along the way. Mm-hmm. So there should be no doubt in everyone's minds that this is a positive time. This is a great era we're entering into for Liverpool.
Yeah.
And look, I feel like it will need a European Cup. We'll probably need to do that just to galvanise the whole endeavour. But if people think that Liverpool are going away, they're sorely mistaken.
Not a chance. And it was partially being just high on just like the emotion from last night. And I was texting Tom and I was saying that there's no chance we lose this. Like, I feel like, and I've touched wood for people out there that are superstitious, but it feels like from what happened last season and just the time and the Klopp and this team specifically, and if we do lose the league by a point, then this team there's going to be so much fire.
Imagine how angry they'll be next season, given that, you know, they've just raged their way to a Champions League final past 10 times harder opponents than they had getting there last year. Imagine if we do, you're right, if we miss out by that narrower margin this time, imagine the state of what we're going to do.
The hunger is going to be, like, it's not going to be quenched until we get that title. Yeah. And that's why, like I said earlier, if we'd have come out of the Champions League and lost the league, that would have been horrible to take. But because of what's happened, I feel like that's the biggest boost we could have ever asked for. Yeah. And now I'm at the point where it's not right for me to say, because I had a conversation with Si before you went to the game, like, would you have taken a ticket for this game? And I was like, probably not, because I didn't think we'd do it. Yeah. And I wouldn't want to go there and see the heartbreak in person. Mm-hmm. And I was proved wrong. So there's no point me saying Brighton can't beat Man City. Of course they can, if this has happened. But it's that point of, I don't think we talk about cycles all the time, you know, how United are at the end of their cycles, Chelsea probably are as well, Spurs are on their way there. This is the start, you know, this is the start of the fire, and we've already gone through three finals by this point, and we've barely even got off the mark.
Yeah. I think the encouraging thing is, just back onto the game, is, you know, City have played Leicester and Burnley, as you mentioned, who had nothing to play for, still give City a game. Newcastle had nothing to play for, still give us a game. Yeah. Brighton are safe, and they said last home game of the season. It's the same for Wolves as well, not to play for. But you can take encouragement from that, going like, they're not going to sit there and lie down, are they?
Absolutely. Part of what being a football fan is all about, especially if you're in the ground, is being able to rub something that you've done into other football fans' faces. and so them Brighton fans will be right up for it.
Oh, they're not going to, you don't say exactly, this is the thing. You know, you're right, Bailey, and again, similar to you, sorry, I was so downbeat about our chances against Barcelona, but I didn't go into it and just keep quiet. I went there and I sang my fucking heart out, because that's what I do. I go to the game. I've got, you know, that's why I go to football. Yeah. Brighton aren't going to be like, oh well, you know, procession for this is not Everton giving a guard of honour to David Moyes as they send him off to Man United. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? This is like, this is. But I hope anyway. That's, you know, because that's what football's supposed to be about. They'll be there going, fuck it, one last time of watching our team before we go off for the summer.
How many times have we heard opposition fans sing to us, "You're gonna win fuck all" over the last couple of months? That's what it's all about. Being able to, as the final whistle blows and it's a 1-1 draw, laughing in those travelling City fans' faces who came up expecting to see Vincent Kompany lift the title. Yeah.
And instead, you know, you get to go off on your summer oldies on a positive note, thinking, oh God, we're going to be in a relegation scrap next season. Maybe we can challenge for a little bit more. Yeah. We can cause some problems. That's what those guys are playing for. You're playing for the optimism, because none of us need it. None of us wants to go into the summer feeling downbeat about the club. The only reason we weren't like that last year was because we signed Fabinho about 2 minutes after we got beaten in the Champions League final. That was the only thing that softened the blow there. But we had a few weeks of being like, oh my God. And like, nobody wants to go that. And that's what we've got to cling on to. We've got to hope. But, and I had to caveat all this, because I did this on the build-up show as well, of course. But look, City are fantastic, aren't they, Ross? And look, they should really just absolutely wipe the floor with them. And if they do, then I think we'll all have to hold our hands up and go, yeah, you know, you can't. If a team wins the league on 98 points, then that you've got at the very least tip your hat to that side.
Yeah, I think it's something you can't quite do now while you're still in the thick of it and you still want them to drop points. I think, you know, like you just said, give it a couple of weeks. If that is the outcome,
yeah,
then, you know, as much as the shit slinging there is and how much you hate them and the FFP stuff we always bring up and everything else, you know, it is respect there, isn't there? And there's competition. And we've both driven each other to this amount of points, I think, because last season they were comfortable. I like they took the piss, but I think we put loads of pressure on them, and I don't think Pep likes it.
And I like the fact that we can talk about, because the word pressure's become a bit of a meme, the same way slips become a meme, and it become, yeah, you know, you're not allowed to use these certain words in football because they get used for, yeah, because of Spurs, because they use as banter tools. If a pool run it to Anfield, and if they do, because obviously we've still got to win against Wolves, of course, which is no short ask. Like, but if it does go right down to the wire, the fact that we can and having the European Cup potentially and having twatted Barcelona, it means that we're kind of bulletproof from banter, at least for this spell, aren't we? Which, yeah, which should make everyone take the pressure, because it's been a pressure on me. And that's why I did that rant on Football Twitter on MXP podcast, like, because it's an annoyance of football, and at least we've got a bit of a blessed relief from that for a spell.
And I'm completely with you on the Football Twitter stuff, because it's when you work in an environment that is new media and requires you to check socials all the time and to be up to date with everything, you can't get away from it. You simply can't. And you can block as many accounts as you want, but they're always there.
I deleted my personal account the other day.
Did you?
Yeah. Wow. Just like, can't be arsed with it. Yeah, and mentally, it's not good for you.
It's so toxic, and it's the fact that that's what I love about it. And it's to the point now that as soon as, like I say, the post-match stuff had finished and we'd heard from all the players and it had sunk in, the first thing I did was go and check rival fans' Twitters.
Yeah.
Because I knew they'd be there either in silence, making excuses, and it was DT saying, you know, this is where Arsenal should be. Goldbridge saying, this is where Liverpool should be. And it's like, but that's the truth. And to be fair, DT said himself, you know, I'm this is out of jealousy. You know, I'm jealous of this club, and that's where the spitefulness comes from. And I get that, because I get, like, it's exactly how we were with United 10 years ago, because you can't use your own success as a sword to fight their success with. Yeah. You have to use their downfall. So, you know, when Fergie missed out on a Premier League trophy to Chelsea, it's like they still finished second. Yeah. And it's like that becomes sort of, ha, you've missed the league and we're seventh.
Yeah.
And it's like,
laughing my head off when Barcelona beat Man United in the Champions League final, the same way that Evertonians that were laughing when we got beat by Madrid last year, because you do talk about schadenfreude, isn't it? It's when you've got nothing happy to be happy about, then taking comfort in the misery of others is what sustains you. So we got a question then from Stephen Richards. Si, who do you think will play in the final, but moreover, who would you rather have?
I think we'll play Ajax.
And would that be, if it was down to you to choose?
It'd be the more exciting game. Mm-hmm. But something that got brought up was we'd be wearing the purple kit if we were playing Ajax, and I'd rather not.
You're
wear
a very superstitious
kit.
As
well. Not because it's superstitious. I just think it's a fucking horrible kit.
I don't want to say, but it was as worn by Time Magazine's Man of the Year. Yeah. Though, like, you know, it's the famous kit. It's almost predestined.
But yeah. I really like the home kit, and I'd much rather be lifting the trophy in the home kit than that purple thing.
Well, they'll probably just swap the shirts out to lift the trophy,
like John Terry.
Well, no, but that's different, isn't it? That's not like Loris Karius coming back because he's alone to lift it. Like, what do you reckon, Bailey? Who do you think it'll be, and who would you like it to be?
I think it'll be Ajax as well. To be honest, I haven't really seen Ajax play by the highlights, and the highlights look unbelievable. You know, for a team that young, they've got so much promise, so much talent. But I was speaking to Andy about it, because I originally said I wanted Spurs, but he was like, you know what? For 10 minutes when they got the goal, they were great, but for the rest of it, Spurs dominated them, and they were like, I don't think they've got bad Dusan Tadic, who go in that team that if it goes, who sort of lifts heads. You know, they're all so young and they're so raw that I think if we did put one or two past them, they'd just fall. So I think I'd prefer Ajax in the final.
We'll be the favourite, whoever it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's mad how, like, last year we were coming up against Real Madrid and we were like the plucky underdogs who hadn't really been in the European Cup for a while or whatever. And now we're the experienced side out of this, and like we're probably the team that we're probably the team that most people around the world want to get beat.
Well, we talked about the change of the guard last year, and how you were starting to see the end of the old generation, like that Juve side, the Real Madrid side, the Barcelona side. All their best players were all at the, you know, in the they're all on the way down. They're not getting any better than what they are, and you're starting to see new sides, and that's the hope, Ross, isn't it? That we've hit our peak. Whereas Ajax will probably be there for a few, well, depending how that team gets dismantled or not. Spurs could potentially be there again because they've still got a good core, good manager, etc., etc. But this does feel like we're the kind of new elite, and we would be favourites.
Yeah, I think so. The only danger with Ajax is because they're so young and because they progress so well and they do play good football. There's no fear there, is there? Yeah. And they've got that thing of, well, we might be back here next season because we're that good. Whereas Spurs, on the other hand, they were in a title race and they couldn't finish fourth.
Yeah.
And they've shown over last week, the Reds can go, we can get to them.
Yeah.
You've got two people sent off the weekend because they just completely lost it. And the manager's just done a press conference before the biggest game of the season saying, probably leave.
Yeah.
Nice one. Cheers.
Yeah, brilliant. Good on that. I feel like we'd have a better... I feel like because we know Spurs.
Yeah.
I want Spurs from a practicality sense because I don't know how fit their team's going to be, and I said this all along. I said Spurs' legs were going to fall off. I said this from before the season kicked off because they had too many people involved at the World Cup. And I think if it comes down to a war of attrition, I think we'll be fitter, and I think we've got slightly more talent as well than them, and we've got the experience of having been there and done it. However, in terms of just a glory tie,
I love the idea of the Liverpool Ajax. Half Scouse, half from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
All gathering in Madrid, singing the songs, and all getting on with each other as well, hopefully. And I just really, really like the idea of that, whereas if it was Liverpool and Tottenham, Tottenham fans are from London.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Bellends, like, but
the other thing as well, I think if we got Spurs, I think I'd probably want them to get fourth. I'm not bank on the fact they have to win the Champions League to get back in it next season because that's an extra motivational factor for them.
Yeah, I think there's definitely
that,
isn't it?
Come fifth and don't get
the hope with both of those teams, though, is that the stuff that we've talked about and what Liverpool have gotten brilliant at this season is the shithousery, it's that bit of the dark arts. We've been experienced, we've come up against the best and we've pulled things from them along the way. Yeah. And that's what we'll have to use, and that's what Liverpool were so good at using in, like, I think it was like 84 and the third and fourth European Cups. We were just better at the whole endeavour, so we knew how to take time out of the game. We didn't need to go there and be scintillating and be amazing. We had all the things going for us, and I'd like that, and that's how it should go. You can't discount the brilliance of Ajax. They might just come and be youthful and exuberant and blow us away. Like, it could be a thing, but
they've done it to teams before.
But you see, like, what Barcelona have been in this time of dominance, what Real Madrid have been during this time of dominance. My feeling is we're at the start of this run now. Of we're going to see a spell of 5 or 6 years where we are right back, we're in the semi-finals every year, and we're in finals every other year. And
that's why Madrid beat us last year. Like, I know you can't legislate for Karius's mistakes, but Ramos, Valen, Salah—that's experience. That's true. But there's so many instances in that game where they were just slowing the game down, especially once they got the lead, they were just slowing the game down, winning contentious decisions with the referee and in the referee's ear constantly. That's what you need to be like if you want to be a top team at this level. Liverpool did it well against Barcelona, and Barcelona did it well against us as well. And I think we'll learn from that tie. We'll learn from the final last year, and the more we go on, the more we learn all these little ways to just when you're in the lead, slow the game down, and how to get into the other team's heads, how to piss off the other team's fans. Mm. That's what you get from being a team top level.
Completely agree. Yeah. Last question then on this podcast. We're going to do the subscriber Q&A in a moment where we answer loads of your random questions. Zippy Bungle says, if you had to give one thing up that you really like so Liverpool clinch the title on Sunday, what would that one thing be?
Doesn't really make sense, this question.
So, let me give you an example of it. If I told you Liverpool win the title if you gave up beer, you get to watch us win it, but you can't go out and celebrate it by getting
give up beer forever.
It's like, would you
drink something else?
Is it just beer?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Just as an example, I just drink so much wine.
Smack white wine in this hand, bottle of red wine.
Stone cold smash in the middle. I could abstain from a number of things for a period of time. I mean, I'm not going to have much choice, to be honest. If Liverpool do clinch the title, I'm going to be good for nothing for a few days. So, you know what? I'll give up sex for a few days because I'm not going to be able to be physically capable.
What if it's forever, though? What's your threshold?
No, I'm definitely not giving sex. That's too important. I'd give up alcohol forever to see Liverpool win the title. Yeah.
I put food and being a doubter. I don't like doing this.
I give up mental fragility.
What about meat?
I would go vegan for not forever. Maybe I'll try it. Maybe because the thing is, if I did it for like a year, I'm sure everyone's vegan seems to think it's bosh.
I'd do it for a year.
They all seem to think it's fucking amazing. So maybe I just love it. Like maybe that would be a good thing.
I'm way too much of a pussy to give up meat. It's too much of my diet.
Too much. Bread and sandwiches are just that's very difficult things to keep in life.
I went quite different angle. I said the satisfaction of having a poo.
But painful poos.
That genuine paradise feeling when you wait all day and you want to go home and just be in that zen zone.
This podcast gets how many views? Usually about 20,000, 30,000.
People in the comments will know exactly what I'm on about.
Okay, let us know if you know what Bailey's on about, and we'll leave that there. Brilliant.
On the bonus Q&A the other week, he was going on about these tablets. He has to.
Yeah, people were right on them.
Stool softeners or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
brilliant. Questions coming up. If you had one game of football you could relive, I think it's before you die. What would it be? Any of the Red Men team getting subbed on for a corner kick in the 94th minute? Who would it be? If you could be bitten by any radioactive animal and gain its powers, what would that be? And a whole load of others as well. Who would that be? Our five Liverpool penalty takers from the current squad. Go to theredmentv.com and sign up for that. Also, as I say, don't forget to go over to the Tokyo Time website. We'll put the links to all that. And a code, of course, is REDMEN10. Get a mitt, the hat fit. They're so fit. If you've got a head that suits hats, then you should be all over Tokyo Time caps. Other than that, guys, thank you very much. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Up the mighty Reds. Walk on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.